Welcome back to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. We can already preview this show by saying there are no guests.
Nope.
It's just us.
Just the two of us.
Foot on the gas. I was thinking about inviting one of my personalities to be on the air with me.
Will he be here?
It depends. I doubt it. But my name is Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And we're going to talk about sports for an hour, give or take. And then we're going to come back. I always do this. I said we're going to come back tonight and talk about basketball for an hour and a half.
We are.
We are, but this isn't tonight to you, dear listener.
That's right.
Because it's yesterday to you, and hopefully you were listening to us talk about girls basketball.
Tonight, last night.
Last night, or 2 days ago, depending on when you're listening to the show. If you podcast, you might get it even earlier. So, yeah, a lot of different options for you, really. But I guess it depends on your perspective. A fun week in the world of sports, or an interesting one. Just weird stuff going on. But I think we just tend to find the weird stories.
We do.
Yeah, that might be the number one thing. So Patriots fans are very upset this week. From what I can see on the Facebooks, Bill Jennings, the station director, I believe Bill Jennings is a Miami Dolphins fan.
I doubt it.
I think he is.
He has season tickets to the Patriots.
Does he really? Okay, yeah. Then hard telling. I don't know. Maybe he's just playing it off pretty well. But
what gave you that
just
thought?
Random posts here and there. And there are also the people posting who are kind of holding it over other people who might be Patriots fans about the outcome of the game. So from my perspective, I didn't watch the game. I was at a gymnastics meet, sitting next to I was watching my fantasy sports team on my computer, on my lap, while I was allegedly timing floor routines, which timing floor routines, for anybody who knows gymnastics, so at this age level, they were supposed to be under a minute, but your song is always going to be under the time. Like, it's not like you're going to do a floor routine that's way longer than your song. Like, your floor routine is in sync with your music. So I was completely useless. Like, nobody ever asked me, did that one go too long? Like, I just basically sat there and watched my fantasy football team on Yahoo. And the guy next to me, who was actually, he had the harder job. So his job was the judge, who, again, I still don't understand how gymnastics judging works. I think they put in a random number generator between 8.5 and 10 and spit out a number. She writes it down on a piece of paper, hands it to the guy with the numbers with the flipper thing. He then shows people like he's in the Rose Parade, like he's waving to the crowd. There's a visual. Now I see why Bill Jennings wants this show on TV. But he's waving his numbers. And then once he's satisfied that everybody's seen the numbers, he puts that back down and waits until the next one. I really didn't have anything to do. So I sat there and watched that. And he was a Pats fan, engrossed in the game, and kept showing me scores. And, of course, I mean, I like the Pats, but I'm not a diehard by any stretch of the imagination, even less so. We talked about it a few weeks ago when Dunkin's stopped giving away the free or discounted coffee at the end of after a game if the Pats won. That was, to me, a really big incentive because I liked free coffee.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm definitely a significant fan of the Patriots, but not a diehard.
Like,
and so when I was doing the same thing. I was actually watching the game,
right?
But I was half watching my fantasy situation
because there's money on the line.
And pride.
How'd that go? How'd that
Lots
work out for you?
I forget. We're on to next season.
And, yep, you're rebuilding.
Yeah, the Spencer Ware, Jalen Samuels snafu is something I'll learn from.
I don't even know what happened.
I picked up Spencer Ware in an instant after
right,
the news came
that.
Out, but I dropped Jalen Samuels instead of somebody else because James Conner has been a rock all season long. He never gets injured. And then, of course, almost the last play of that game that week is when he gets a leg contusion that sort of looks like he fractured something maybe it was a high ankle sprain, but all of a sudden Jalen Samuels is now in as the featured running back for the Steelers. And oh, by the way, he's eligible as a running back and a tight end on Yahoo.
Yeah.
So if I had dropped somebody else instead of Samuels, things could have been a lot different. And so the thing was, when the news came out about the Chiefs running back, and I rushed to get Spencer Ware,
right,
I didn't think I had time to really think deeply about, okay, who am I going to release?
Right. You were just, I want to get my guy.
Right. So,
and Spencer Ware, he's hurt now.
Right. He didn't play last night.
Right. No.
But I should still have Samuels. Could have played him as tight end. And then you would have had two running backs and
a tight end scoring like a running back.
Exactly.
Which is just not fair. So,
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, the world of fantasy football turns. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people fall into that mold now where, yes, I'm a fan of my team, but I want my fantasy team because there's cash and pride riding on the line, because we all talk an amazing amount of trash to each other via text or whatever else. There's that. But then there's also the, do you have any cash going on the side about any other games that might be making you watch it? Are you watching a total? Like, there are many other things to consider. So your fan loyalty is somehow compromised by the other stuff that's going on. I didn't see anything about it until like hours later, somebody mentioned something and I went, they didn't win?
Yeah.
Because it's funny. There are people, grown people, who were going to their child's gymnastics meet, which happened to be at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, which is the same time as kickoff. There are grown people going to the gymnastics meet in Pats gear. Like, super fan, yes, showing up in Pats gear, super fan 99. And I go walking out and I'm kind of like a neither here nor there, like, hey, cool. And, you know, hey, you going to go watch the end of the game? Yeah, all 6 minutes of it. Well, it turned out that if you didn't watch the last 6 minutes,
you
might as well have not watched. It's like watching the last couple minutes of The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, so I was sitting there with the game on. I'd been watching the whole thing, but I wasn't watching the play too closely because they're starting at the 31-yard line. They're 69 yards away. You don't think they're going to win the game on that play. And then about the time that Drake avoided the tackle from Van Noy and made his cut inside, and
Oh.
I was like, whoa, uh-oh. Yeah, I said to Sarah, oh my, this is getting crazy. And then, sure enough, he beats Gronk to the end zone, and then Miami goes berserk. But it was, it's one of those plays that's going to live on forever in so many ways. Just the amazing execution from the Dolphins, the failures of the Patriots. And I want to talk about that for a minute, because Bill Belichick has been criticized for having Gronk in on that play. But before we even get to Gronk, why aren't we talking about all of the Patriots defenders who didn't tackle Drake,
right,
who weren't just on a dead sprint back towards the goal line? The multiple guys you could see they passed the buck, so to speak, and they just were relying on their teammates to make the tackle. They just kept thinking, oh, well, he'll make the tackle. I don't need to sprint back. And there are two or three guys that if they had been on a dead sprint, they easily could have tackled Drake, because when he made that cut at the 40, he started running sideways. He ran towards the middle of the field.
Yes. Yeah.
That gives you a lot of time to catch up to him. But
yeah. I don't disagree with that, but I think Belichick out Belichicked himself on that play. And we all have been conditioned over the last 20 years or so to think if Bill Belichick makes a decision, this is the right decision, and he's making it for a reason. He is not, whether it's Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl last year sitting, there must be a reason, because Bill Belichick would not have sat a valuable player in the Super Bowl. He knows. He has his reason. And he's been right more than he's been wrong. You look at the weird things. Mike Vrabel lining up on offense. Troy Brown lining up on defense. Like, there have been a lot of things over the years that you say, it makes no sense, but it fits into the do your job mantra. The you might not know what your job is on any given day, and it might be way easier to say, I'm a wide receiver, but today it's your job to play defense. This is what I need you to do. This is how you're most valuable to the team. Therefore, this is what you'll do. To me, at that point, Gronk is big. Gronk big. Gronk jump high.
Gronk bat ball down.
Gronk bat ball down. Gronk is anticipating like a 50-yard chuck from Tannehill that he's going to, like, the goal line isn't at the 20. Like, you figure Tannehill's got to drop back a little bit from the 31. So, okay, for him to get the ball in the end zone, he's got to throw the ball a solid 80 yards for Gronk even to be a factor on that play. Like, that's, no, he's not Randall Cunningham. He's Ryan Tannehill. So I don't need Gronk there. What I need is an athlete. I need Obi. I need Slater. I need somebody who's going to be able to jump and be able to chase. And that's it. And that's not what Gronk does.
Well, that is the argument.
Right. And I don't listen to, this is going to be weird. I know it's a shock to everybody. I don't listen to sports radio at all. So I don't know what anybody has said about anything.
Well, you don't even have to listen to sports radio if you read articles. There are plenty of articles
I don't
written
read
about it.
Words.
People jump at the chance to criticize Belichick when they're outside of New England. So, of course, they did play.
And everybody has laughed, like, heartily at this, the what has happened. And I guess heavy lies the head that wears a crown, right? Like, if you're the one who has been at the top for so long, yeah, you're going to expect that. Like, it's, I'm going to, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. That is what comes to you when,
right,
when you're the Patriots, because people are sick of it. Like, for right or wrong, I talk to people who don't live here, who are friends of mine, and you're not a Patriots fan, are you? You're not a Red Sox fan, are you? Like, they're judging my character based upon, do you root for the teams that are your hometown team? And I'm like, you know what? I can't say I was a Patriots fan in 1986 and I had a Steve Grogan poster up on my wall. Like, I didn't live that. I was a Rams fan back then. And as much as, like, I will watch the Rams now and want to root for them, I can't. I can't bring myself to do that simply because they left. It's like rooting for your ex-girlfriend to become a centerfold. Like, you don't, like, you don't root for that. And so I never rooted for the Rams because Georgia Frenieri took them away. And so my childhood football fanism is gone. Like, it was erased from existence. I might as well have been a Browns fan. So, like, I don't have that. So I don't have the I lived and died with the Patriots. But it's way more fun living here when you have a team that's good because people want to watch them and you can go and have a couple beverages and watch a game and the season continues. When they're not in the Super Bowl parties are kind of an afterthought.
Right.
Yeah, which is a bummer because that's fun too.
Yeah, there's never been a dynasty in the NFL like Belichick and Brady. But I'm going to give you the flip side of the Gronk argument because
okay, go.
I hear that argument. I know there's that makes some sense. But I'm going to defend Belichick because you have to do a lot of calculations. They're at the 31-yard line. So nobody thinks that Ryan Tannehill is Randall Cunningham and that he can throw it 80, 85 yards in the air. But are we sure that he can't throw it 70 yards? Or what if he throws it from the 30 and it lands, you know, it's going to land at the 2 or the 3? I think you still want Gronk up there batting it down. Because
that's not my choice.
What do you mean not your choice?
I don't think if I'm looking at what a rating for a player is based upon speed, based upon vertical leap, he's not my guy. He's not my guy in that situation. I want a guy who can jump and run, particularly because if I'm thinking through that play, okay, Tannehill's not going to throw from the 30 because there's going to be a little bit of a rush. His pocket may collapse a little bit because they're sending out more wide receivers on that play anyway. So the pocket might collapse a little bit. So Tannehill's forced out. But Tannehill's not going to run up to the 30. He's going to throw it from that 25-ish. Even if he gets an absolute perfect heave, you're still talking the 5-yard line. It's one thing if it's the 50-yard line, you know he's going to chuck it in the end zone. From the 25, you think they're going to try some kind of gadgety thing, because we've all seen enough football at this point to know that there's going to be some kind of swinging gate or something cute like that to try to get the ball in the end zone. The Hail Mary from 75 yards, I think I've seen it. Was that Cordell Stewart and back in Colorado over Michigan in, 1994?
In the altitude?
Yeah, that might be the only instance that I can think of that.
But we've also seen 70-ish yard throws that do get caught at the 5, and maybe there's a lateral right there at the 5. I mean, that's a play that we've all seen, and Gronk is your tallest, most athletic receiver type who can go up and either intercept that ball at the 5 or knock it down. So I think, and if you think about the odds of, all right, they're at the 31, What are the odds of if they dump it underneath with the gadgety play that you're talking about? What are the odds that that play gets into the end zone? Have you ever actually seen that in the NFL, where you throw it? You're at the 31, you throw a 20-yard pass, and then two laterals later, the guy scores a touchdown.
No, I think the
odds of that are about 0.001. I mean, it's never happened in the NFL.
I know. To your point, I think there were a couple things that happened with this. I think one is, you're right that the Patriots players gave up on the play. For whatever reason, they didn't do their job, to quote Belichick. The other thing is Gronk's not, I don't care. Gronk's not your safety guy in that situation. Like, there are any number of guys that to me are a better safety guy.
Right, he's not the safety who's going to tackle.
Well, he's not.
That's not why he was in there.
I don't know. But there are other guys. I think you have to play percentages, and there are levers, and there are always, there's a give and a take with everything. But if I look at it as an objective sports fan, I feel like the benefit that Gronk gives me because of his ability to jump and leap after a ball is outweighed by the detriment of the lack of speed and the kind of lack of knowing how to cut an angle. Really, more than anything else. It's using the sideline as a defender. He doesn't play defense. Like, so for him to know how to cut an angle and force somebody out of bounds, that's a foreign thing for him. I think what you gain by his jumping ability and his height are outweighed by his complete lack of defensive instincts and his lack of speed.
Yeah, and I think that is the argument. I weigh those two things in favor of Gronk being out there because, again, the odds of him being on an island and being the one guy to try and make the tackle are so slim. I think Belichick and the Patriots are thinking if that play happens 1,000 times, only once is Gronk by himself trying to make that tackle. But one other thing I want to say about the Randall Cunningham thing, which I think is a great comment, something I was thinking about, is how many NFL teams scout the arm strength of the opposing quarterback for the Hail Mary? And even if you wanted to scout it, could you actually get an accurate read on it? I mean, how do you know if Tannehill can throw it 70 yards? If he can flush the pocket, get to the 30 and throw it, can he throw it 70 yards in the air? I don't think Belichick would want to say, I'm going to guarantee that he cannot. It's unlikely. I don't think Tannehill's ever been somebody you think of like John Elway, and I say his name for a reason, but somebody with a cannon. I don't think he's been known as that guy, but I don't think Belichick wants to rely on the assumption that he cannot throw it 70 yards in the air. Or again, even if he can only throw it 67, 68 yards in the air, what happens if there's a jump ball at the 3? You know, it can get tipped into the end zone from there.
Yeah.
Or somebody can catch it and lateral it. And so I think that's why Gronk was out there.
Well, I mean, you saw the tip happen in the Eagles-Cowboys game where the Eagles corner looked like he had a break on the ball, got it with his left hand while his right hand was being held, by the way. The officiating is just so bad this year, just so atrocious. but his right hand was being held by Amari Cooper. And so he only gets it with his left hand and knocks it into the air, to which Amari Cooper picks it up and goes into the end zone for a touchdown. It just, ugh, bad. Tannehill, I mean, I remember when he was playing quarterback at Texas A&M, he was a surprise guy. He was a combine guy. And he was a combine guy because of his athleticism, because he was a wide receiver at A&M before he switched to quarterback. So I don't know anything about his arm strength, but he's a toolsy guy like that. So maybe he's got a super strong arm. I really don't know, but I don't know. I do not, in that situation, Gronk is not the guy who's on the field for me. If you're Belichick, you leave him out there and hey. So I mentioned John Elway. Or you mentioned John Elway.
Yes.
Which...
For a reason.
I guess before we get to that, Hansen sent me, and I just looked at it a minute ago, somebody has gone and put together a 8-bit Tecmo Bowl version of that last play of the Patriots-Dolphins game. It's on YouTube. Just Google Miami Miracle Tecmo, and you'll find it.
Boy, is it incredible.
It's brilliant. And it's only got 53,000 views. Like... But it's utterly perfect. I have no idea how they do that. But, hey, I'm glad there's somebody who does it because...
If you've ever played Tecmo Bowl, you have to pull up this
clip.
Yeah,
it's perfect. Although, it's a lot of Tecmo Bowl references because somebody showed me a video of the Bedford 10U team taking on the team from Florida that they lost to 19-0. They had a kid in their backfield who had to be like 6'2", 250. Like a large human. And when he ran the ball, it was like Tecmo Bo Jackson.
Uh-oh. Watch out.
Yeah. So it's not really fair. It's a big kid.
That's big.
A 10-year-old that, yeah, it's 250 pounds.
Derrick Henry against 10-year-olds.
Right. It's like Derrick Henry against a 10-year-old. So, but yeah, all the Tecmo references. And again, congratulations to the 10U squad for their great run.
John Elway.
So, getting back to John Elway, yes.
The play. The Stanford band,
the band
play.
The band is out on the field.
November 20th, 1982.
Yep.
Most of you have seen that clip. Remember the play. It was another incredible series of laterals leading to a game-winning touchdown on the final play. And so, of course, that was one of the first things I thought of when the Miami Miracle happened. But... So many things I learned about the Stanford band play that I thought were fascinating just from Wikipedia, that, you know, the controversy of the laterals and was the guy down on the third lateral?
Yes.
And apparently Sports Illustrated did an in-depth piece on it and people have done these high-resolution video replays of it. Apparently it's inconclusive of whether his knee was down. It sure looked like his knee had to have been down. And then that last lateral, there were five laterals on the Stanford band play. The last lateral, was it a forward lateral or not? That's, again, it's tough to see because the camera angle is so far away and it's from behind the play. But one of the crazy things about that play that you may not remember is the guy who received that kickoff five laterals later is the one who scored the touchdown.
Right.
Kevin Moen.
Yes.
So... It's just so much fun. And John Elway was the quarterback on the losing team in that game, Stanford. And if you, one thing, again, you don't remember off the top of your head is that Stanford kicked a field goal right before that play to go ahead. They were down 19-17. They kicked the field goal
right,
to go up 20-19.
The conclusion of that game was over.
Yeah, because there were 4 seconds left. But that's the interesting thing. He had been instructed by his coach to call timeout with 8 seconds left just in case they bobbled the snap or there was a penalty.
Right.
And so by calling a timeout with 8 seconds left instead of what you see today, like maybe 3 or 4 seconds and making sure the field goal is the last play,
yeah,
that didn't seal the victory. And then the loss took Stanford from 5-5 to 5-6, and it prevented them from getting an invitation to a bowl game. And John Elway was complaining about that and always distraught about it. But you always wonder, I mean, what had happened maybe if he goes to a bowl game, gets injured, doesn't have the same NFL career that he has.
Right.
So just funny how things play out. But I did not know that backstory of the fact that Stanford called the timeout with 8 seconds, and that's what allowed that play to happen.
Right. It's the entire sequence of events was just bizarre, and you've no doubt seen it if you're, you know, it's at some point in time. The thing that instant replay is good because it allows officials to fix errors in judgment, or not even errors in judgment, just straight up errors. Like judgment calls you can't fix, but there are a lot of things, fair or foul, was the guy down? I'm not going to say instant replay is a perfect thing, but in the instance of a Cal Stanford play like that, what it really does, and the other one that you can think of is the Miami Duke one, where Miami beat Duke and had 4 laterals on a kickoff. I don't remember how long ago that was, but that was one that was botched by that ACC officiating crew. The thing that you sort of lose with instant replay is that really weird ending, because you hate to say it, if you were watching that on HD now, they would send it up to a booth somewhere. They would probably rule that, maybe Stanford's band being on the field was some kind of unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Penalties declined, touchdown is still good. But there would be somewhere along the line something wrong that somebody's able to look at and say that was not a touchdown. And then the play just becomes a complete footnote. Whereas now it's the cornerstone of that rivalry. I mean, living out in California, people used to wear T-shirts, because I was in Southern California, obviously not Northern, but people used to wear T-shirts that had the diagram of the play on the back of it. People had posters of it. Like, it became an iconic thing, and I was, 350 miles away from it. It was still a big thing. So, like, that's what you lose with instant replay. We talked about it briefly, talking about the Patriots game and the Eagles-Cowboys game. The officiating in the NFL, we saw it last night in the Thursday night game between the Chiefs and the Chargers, and you would almost get a microcosm of it if you looked at the text string that you and I are on with the rest of those clowns. But it appeared when the Chiefs were driving down the field that the NFL just wanted the Chiefs to win. It was a play would happen and it would be an incomplete pass. On third down, it would be a defensive holding and it's an automatic first down. And it was like this kept happening over and over and over again. And then you go, okay, the Chiefs wind up on a kickoff, block in the back, get the ball in lousy field position, don't do anything at all, punt it back to the Chargers. The Chargers score, but they score the touchdown on what really should have been an offensive pass interference call. However, and the play before that had been a third down that should have been an offensive pass interference call and wasn't. Like, these things that should have been called and aren't. And you almost wonder, like, in a pre-instant replay era, this stuff would have just been let go. It would have been incidental contact. Now, because we have the ability to break these things down frame by frame and zoom in, and was the guy juggling the ball? Did he have control of the ball as he went out of bounds? Now you're able to look at these things with a critical sense that you wouldn't have been able to beforehand. And yeah, I guess the thing on the NFL level that I'm going to say is I don't think the NFL's got it in for either team. I think the officiating's just bad. And I think that the fact that we can look at it in instant replay and determine, yes, that was a penalty or no, that wasn't a penalty. Those guys are watching that in real time and they don't have the luxury that we have of deconstructing it at 30 frames a second.
Right, which goes to the point of the fact that it's challenging to officiate those high-speed plays on the boundary. Is he juggling? Are both feet in? But isn't it amazing that on the Mike Williams touchdown that you thought was going to be the way that the Chargers would tie the game until they went for two, but that juggle, it was refreshing that they actually called it a touchdown and upheld it as a touchdown. In terms of the penalties, it did feel that way with the penalties in favor of the Chiefs. But then the thing about the pass interference in the end zone, that allowed the Chargers to have the ball at the one. You got to remember, you go backwards one play. That's when Rivers got speared in the head, and they did not call a penalty on that. And I think there was a human element, human nature coming into play where, okay, we probably missed that one. And then the 50-50 play in the end zone of was that pass interference or not, we're going to give it to the Chargers because we blew the last call.
Right. Well, you look at Rivers, though, and Rivers gets up and he's complaining about it. Well, we're asking a linebacker who it's his job to launch his body into players like it's a missile. That's his job. It's his job to bring people down. And so you're asking a guy who's pursuing on a play to somehow not make that, to like have the body control to not finish that play. Like, none of us could do that at a fraction of the size of those guys. So it's easy to watch it in slow motion and say, yeah, okay, Rivers had a point. But realistically, how's that guy going to stop his progress once, and Rivers didn't really slide. Rivers just kind of went in with one knee. His head was waist high. Bad for him. Like, because if Rivers is standing, that's a tackle made in good form.
Right.
But Rivers goes down and now it's a hit to the head. Well, like, that's not an easy thing to do if you're a finely tuned athlete. Stop on a dime, flip. Like, how are you going to avoid that? So, I don't know. Rivers drives me bonkers anyway. Like that was the immovable object and the irresistible force. Like, I didn't want either of those teams to win the game. I can't stand the Chiefs and the Chargers. Like, I like the Chargers. I like their coach. I like a lot of the players on that team. Phillip Rivers whines a lot, man. And that's, he will be a Hall of Fame quarterback and great for him, but he's also a Hall of Fame whiner. You got hit. We saw that you got hit, but you don't have to. The histrionics aren't necessary. This isn't soccer. Like, get up, go after the next one. That's it. So, yeah. So we wound up talking about the NFL for 32 minutes. Do we want to cruise right into baseball, or do we want to? What do we want to talk about next? We got a long list of things.
Do we want to hear any music as a break, or do we want to just keep going?
We can keep going.
Okay.
We'll save Harry the trouble of putting music together. So, baseball winter meetings were out in Vegas. Between my LinkedIn feed and my Facebook feed, I'm jealous. Because Vegas.
Vegas,
and
baby.
Baseball. Like, really, I mean, what else do you want? Some moves.
Apparently, there must have been plenty of distractions out in Vegas this week, shocker, that interfered with many moves being completed.
Right. There wasn't really a whole lot made in the way of moves. Kind of disappointing.
Just, everybody was doing other stuff.
Yeah, Machado is still available. Bryce Harper is still available. I think the Red Sox should sign Machado. I think the fans would like him.
Oh, yeah, perfect fit.
He'd be a great fit. I'm sure the first time he went into a slump, nobody would ever say a word.
No. Nope.
They'd be very patient with him.
Absolutely.
As they are with all free agents.
Yes.
Manny Machado still on the market. Bryce Harper still on the market. The word had it was from the experts. Experts was that Yasiel Puig was going to wind up as a Cincinnati Red and Harper was going to go to the Dodgers. I have no idea how you put him in the outfield because you have enough players there to last you a lifetime. But as somebody brought up on ESPN the other day, Kike Hernandez is a nice player, but he shouldn't be hitting fourth for you in the World Series.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that too. It's sad to say, but it's accurate. You and I, as I guess the only Royals fans outside of the ones who live in my house in this area, I'm excited they got Billy Hamilton.
Speed.
That's what speed do. That was their template, though, to winning, was the Jerod Dyson days of we have this burner out there in center field.
It's funny to talk about the Jerod Dyson days as if they were two decades ago.
It was. It feels like it.
It was really, what, 3 years ago?
There have been a lot of losses in between. But, Billy Hamilton is a Royal. Which is exciting. And the funny thing that I didn't realize about Billy Hamilton was how much he absolutely terrorized the rest of the NL Central. Like, Pirates fans, when I went to do a little bit of research on Billy Hamilton becoming a Royal, Pirates fans were like having a holiday that he wasn't going to be playing for the Reds anymore. It's just bizarre.
Get him out of our division, out of our league.
Right, exactly.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, now we don't have to see him. So Billy Hamilton, now Royal. The Red Sox saying goodbye to a World Series hero.
Joe Kelly?
Southern California kid, though.
Can he swing the outcome of a rematch World Series next year now that he will be coming out of the pen for your Dodgers?
I don't know that the Dodgers get back to the World Series again. But, I mean, it's really not terribly difficult for them to get out of the West, because the West is sad and depressing. But I don't know. I don't know that I see them getting there again.
3 years, $25 million. Yep. I think that's a good price tag for a guy who can hit 100 on the radar gun. He can be a spot starter for you if you need him to. When he's on, he is tough to hit against.
Yes, I agree. And the what's the going rate for a win that they're throwing out to these days in the majors? $6 million.
Is it that much now?
Something like that.
Wow, inflation.
Yeah, wins aren't what they used to be.
I would have said three.
I thought it was more. So the what is a win really worth? I don't know. So anyway, trying to figure that out. I thought Joe Kelly was... I think that's too much money. However, if it prevents you for the year of the Dodgers from dealing with some of the
Ryan Madsen. You should be all smiles today.
Yeah.
Because this bumps Ryan Madsen down the pecking order.
So FanGraphs in particular generally values free agents at $9 million a war. So, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's... So, I mean, I guess what is that? That makes Mookie like a $60 million a year player. That's insane. So yeah, Joe Kelly to the Dodgers. The Red Sox will have to fill that gap in the bullpen. Andrew McCutchen, who a few years ago, if you had said, will he finish his career as a Pittsburgh Pirate? Everybody would have said, yes, this guy is a Pirate for life. He will play for his third team in 2 years next year. The Phillies did 3-50 for Kutch, so that will be fun. He'll most likely be the left fielder for the Phillies. But the thought there was that does that open up right field for Bryce Harper? Because the Phillies signed a new TV deal and have a whole bunch of money, and it's also getting out from under the Ryan Howard contract as well. That makes a difference. But what you can get for Bryce Harper's 26 years old, like he theoretically could get the next $300 million contract.
Well, isn't that what the Nationals offered him? Didn't they go?
Yeah, they offered him 30 a year.
10 years for $300 million.
Yep.
They said, this is our best offer, and he has so far declined it.
Yeah, he declined it. Some are saying that LA will be a better fit for him because of, he's from Vegas. But because of his general sort of mentality and desire for the spotlight, I can see that. And I think it's good for baseball if you have Mike Trout and Bryce Harper in the same market.
That'd be really exciting.
Yeah.
That would market itself.
Right. Rob Manfred wouldn't need to worry about Mike Trout marketing himself. But so that would be an interesting one. But the real question that I want to know is Bryce Harper better than Babe Ruth?
Yeah, this is fun. We got to talk about the Bambino.
Yep.
Because you found you ventured off into a place.
Yeah, I went to my dark place.
You hadn't gone for so long. Deadspin, and you came up with a really really fun article.
I did. So Adam Ottavino, who he's a good reliever. He's not going to be a guy that you...
Not a household name.
He's not a household name. I like the fact that he wears zero, because his name starts with an O. So that's, to me, is appropriate. But he was doing an MLB podcast, and they were talking about how pitching has changed and it makes it tougher for hitters. And I think you'd be foolish to say that it hasn't.
Right.
Like, these guys are filthy, dirty, and... You watch hitters and you say, I have no idea how some of these guys ever hit with some of these disappearing sliders. The pitchers have gotten better and better and better at hiding what they're doing, that they can really make hitters look foolish. But Ottavino says, I remember I had an argument with a coach in AAA about Babe Ruth's effectiveness in today's game, This was like 10 years ago. I said, look, Babe Ruth, that swinging that bat, I got him hitting 140 with 8 homers. And Ottavino's coach says, are you nuts? Babe Ruth would hit 370 with 60 homers. And Ottavino says, I would strike out Babe Ruth every time. Like, I'm not trying to disrespect him, you know, rest in peace, you know, shout out to Babe Ruth. But it was a different game. I mean, the guy ate hot dogs and drank beer and did whatever he did. It was just a different game. I got to say, I agree with him.
You think he would hit what?
He wouldn't even get drafted because...
Oh, come
like,
on.
I don't know.
Kevin Youkilis got drafted.
Yeah, so did Jeremy Brown. The thing...
This is going to be the second time on this show that we disagree.
We disagree. It's weird. I really do think that... I don't know. I guess you have to think of things given the market condition. So this is 2018. Babe Ruth was playing 100 years ago, which is crazy. So you would think, would 2018 Babe Ruth lift weights?
Yeah, he would.
Would he be on a workout regimen? Would he not be eating hot dogs and drinking beer?
Doesn't matter.
Why?
Because he would mash.
Yeah, I don't think he rakes. I don't think he rakes. No, I don't. I think, like, I don't know, maybe it's because we're all conditioned to watching the video of him just run with his little arms and his little legs and be choppy. I don't know. I don't think that, like, stand him next to Mike Trout. Stand him even next to McCutcheon.
And he would look down at them like little kids.
He would not look down at Trout like a little kid.
Well, physically, he's 6'2", 215. I had to look that up.
Okay.
I was wondering, I started to think about...
He would look down at McCutcheon like he's a little kid because McCutcheon's my height.
Well, and Trout's short as well. He's under 6 feet,
two.
Right?
Trout's 6'2".
He's listed at 6'2"? I don't buy that.
Harper's
no way.
6'3".
No way.
Harper's 6'3". Yeah.
No way.
But I think the game has changed. I think, I do think that Babe Ruth, I don't know. I really don't know. It's a great topic, like, but I don't have a captivating reason why, other than that he's not built like today's baseball player. I think if you popped him in right now and said go hit, he would be mystified at what some of these guys are throwing.
Well, let's start with his hand-eye coordination, and I'll give you some reasons why he would mash today.
Okay.
He obviously had the best hand-eye coordination of his time.
Yes.
And combine that with power, because he retired with 714 home runs. He was by far the career home run leader. He figuratively lapped the field in power during his day. And so I started to think about, well, what are some of the potential weaknesses of Babe Ruth in today's game that people would think about? And so I started thinking about athleticism, because in my mind, he was like 6'4", 230. And so according to Baseball Reference, he's 6'2", 215. You know, I don't know about that for all points of his career. I'm going to say he was tipping the scales a little bit higher than that at various points in his career. But I started to think about, well, you know, what kind of an athlete was he? And if you look at Baseball Reference, you find some really interesting statistics about Babe Ruth that I had never known. What would you guess, if before you pull it up, what would you guess his career total for triples would be?
Oh, his numbers are mind-boggling. I'm not...
He had 136 triples. He had over 500 doubles and, of course, the 714 home runs. He also stole 123 bases. He got caught stealing 117 times. But
that's bad.
So he's better than 50-50 stealing bases. He actually would do it. And the fact that he had all those triples, it says a lot about his athleticism. Although, you know, some of the parks had big alleys back in those days, and so that may have contributed to it. But as I'm looking at his triples, I go back to the year 1921.
Okay.
And I notice that he had 59 homers, 44 doubles, and 16 triples. You do the math. That's 119 extra base hits.
Yep.
And I was thinking, that it has to be a record.
Yes.
And I pull it up, and sure enough, it is. It's the record for extra base hits in a season. And so, again, he was the best hitter by far of his era. Incredible hand-eye coordination. I think if you put him in today's era, he's got all those things going for him, and he'll figure it out. He'll find a way to compete as well as anybody else.
So here's my other fun fact about Babe Ruth, I guess, as it pertains to that. So the average American male then was about 5'6". The average American male now is about 5'9". So he was an outlier.
So he would have been 6'5".
Thereabout. Well, no.
if he was born in these days and ate healthy.
But I can't look and say dude would have automatically been 6'5". So I don't know. I think the game has changed enough. I think that pitchers have gotten so much better. Like, if the question is, this is like, can Ditka drive the bus? Is Ditka driving the bus? Does Babe Ruth show up here from 1918 and have to face disappearing sliders and guys throwing 102? Or does Babe Ruth get to go through an AAU program and or play in college and do all the perfect game showcases and play in the minors and have access? Like, if you just take dude and insert dude now without him having access to anything, I think he just gets run over.
Might struggle a little
bit. But if you take dude and give him access to, like, if dude is born now instead of 1895 and has the opportunities that somebody now does, I think he, with his innate abilities, yes, he's great. If you just take him from then and plop him in now, I think he's just, his jaw is on the ground watching some of this stuff. Not to mention bats are different. Like, everything about the game is different. So before we get too down the road of other things, and we are going to talk about Bedford sports too, wanted to take a moment. Did you ever meet him, Dirty Al?
No, only through your stories.
Okay, so Dirty Al Gallagher, who, if you listen to the show regularly,
heard him probably at least three times.
You've heard of him. So I'm talking to exactly one person in the Venn diagram of things. But so Dirty Al, who was the manager when I worked in Kansas City, passed away, a week ago yesterday? So the 6th of December. Out in Fresno, I had been searching for him, not actively, but I had people telling me that he was living in Duluth. I was trying to find him there, couldn't find him, tried to text him, didn't get responses to texts, probably changed his number a couple times. This guy, so he played baseball at Santa Clara in college and earned the name Dirty Al by having a 25-game hitting streak and 25-game win streak for the team. And during that time, he did not actually wash his uniform, any part of it.
Anything he was wearing on the field.
Just gross. But
that's so superstition for
Dirty
you.
Al did that. He was, without a doubt, I love him. I loved him. He was the filthiest human being I've ever come in contact with in, like, any kind of a professional setting. Like, you'd take him to a meeting with you, and he would have... He'd be wearing a golf shirt, but there'd be coffee or dip stains on it. Like, he'd have things kind of in the crooks of his mouth. Like, he was always, always disheveled. If he wasn't disheveled, there was something wrong with the situation. But never met anybody who loved baseball as much as he did. He referred to himself as Dirty Al. He was an encyclopedia of baseball. He played at Santa Clara. He was the 14th pick in the 1965 draft. So he was the 14th pick ever, because that was the first draft. First San Francisco native to play for the Giants. Then got traded from the Giants to the Angels. Then somewhere along the line broke his back and lost a lot of his power. Washed out. He was kind of ahead of the game a little bit, at least in some ways. He refused in the minors. They focus more on player development than they do on winning. Al liked to win. To him, winning was important. So he was always battling with front offices and major league teams about, I want to win. And they're saying, no, we want you to play prospects to season these guys. That guy doesn't give me a chance to win. Ultimately, he got knocked out of affiliated ball and wound up in independent ball in the 90s and became one of those just real characters that independent ball bred, because guys like to play for him. He kind of let them do what they wanted to. And in a lot of cases, you have to. I mean, you played with guys, I'm sure, the former first round draft picks who had washed out for one reason or another, Al could get along with them and he could kind of make the clubhouse work. How I met him was I was the broadcaster in Hagerstown, Maryland, and called up the Kansas City T-Bones, where obviously my wife is from, and called those guys up and could not get in touch with anybody in that front office, and finally got the receptionist and lied to her. And I told her that the general manager of the team, a guy named Adam Ellert, I told her that Adam and I were supposed to meet and could she please check his calendar to get a meeting on. And I said, I'm going to be in town these days. And she said, sure enough. Okay. He can see you at whatever, 2 o'clock on Monday. Great. So I show up at the stadium. Adam had, as always, Adam had something else going on. Adam's dad, John, owned the team. He had owned the Duluth Superior Dukes before moving the team down to Kansas City. And he says, our field manager can meet with you. Can you, you know, basically
is
go
that,
meet?
Is that good enough?
Yeah,
is that okay?
I'm like, sure. Like,
is that a fair substitute?
How's this guy going to give me a job? Like, how is this even possible? And sure enough, Al starts interviewing me and telling me about what their former media relations person had done. I didn't know I was interviewing for anything. but asking, oh, this is what our former media relations person did. This is what she didn't do. Do you know how to update a website? Yeah, I can update a website. Like, fingers crossed behind my back. I didn't know how to do it. I had to buy a book on HTML coding in order to actually update the website. Like, do you know how to do X, Y, and Z? You know, have you done corporate sales? Yeah, I've done corporate sales. He asked me a few questions. Sure enough, I sent him a thank you note. The next day, I get a job offer to go be the director of media relations and broadcaster in Kansas City. I have no idea. Like, it still blows my mind. And then,
just as you drew it up,
weird. And then Al and I shared an office up in the press box. The press box wasn't heated, and so it was cold because it's winter in Kansas City. And so we'd have space heaters, and Al was down below. Like, we had a tier up top in the press box and then, like, the counter where you broadcast from. He was down below in the press box, and it was cold in there, and he had COPD, so he didn't breathe all that well. So I'm sitting there. It's the off season. I got to make sales calls because my base salary isn't going to allow me to do anything. And I'm making sales calls and talking to people, and they're saying, is that guy in the office with you okay? Because Al is just hacking things up, like, and doesn't sound good. But I, you know, I got a meeting with so-and-so. Can I come? I'm going to help you close the deal. Like, he always, I'll help you. Sure, come on, let's go. Let's go. Not all the time, but sometimes. And then there were the people who, hey, can you come speak at our Rotary Club, our Kiwanis Club, our whatever? Didn't matter if there were five people there. Al would be like, hey, get in the car, let's go. And we would go and sell baseball. The easiest thing in the world. Like, you're talking to the field manager and the broadcaster. It doesn't matter that I don't know my backside from my elbow. Like, you're talking to two of us. He played in the major leagues. He can tell you stories about meeting Jonas Salk and Ronald Reagan and Jackie Robinson. He can tell you his favorite story, which is not a true story, about Willie Mays being in the bathroom in a bathroom stall or at a urinal. And he said, yeah, Willie walk into the bathroom and come out, and then hit the side of his leg was wet. And I was like, why is your leg wet, Willie? And the guys, and he said, because Willie Mays would say, I walked in the bathroom. I was just minding my own business. And guy came into the urinal next to me and inevitably would say, oh my God, it's Willie Mays, and turn to him while he's still peeing. Like, just stuff like that. And like, he'd talk about him like we talk about the guys that we play softball with, because Willie Mays was his teammate. Like, there were times that we came up with this bad idea. I had one of our pitchers in center field on a wireless mic, and he was my color guy. Not a good idea. He decided to say some things about the ownership of the team. I get an irate phone call from our good friend Rick Muntean. What did you guys say about John on the air? I'm like, I don't even know. And Al convinced John not to basically
fire everybody,
send me walking that day. We had another one where I had our catcher on the wireless mic, and that happened. The one with the pitcher in the bullpen happened after this story that I'm about to tell you, but the catcher was on the wireless mic. He wasn't catching that day. We were using him as the color guy. Al was fine with that. So I'm talking to the catcher, Matt Seriani.
And he's in the bullpen?
No, he's downstairs, and we're talking about the umpiring, and Seriani's saying, "Oh, yeah, that pitch missed high." And the league wants to suspend Seriani because he's second-guessing the umpires. Al convinces them not to suspend him, convinces John not to fire me. He was a true baseball guy. He understood that that was what I loved and supported me in it. And, gave me the opportunity to do it, and always treated everybody with the best possible respect you could imagine. He was his parents' only son. So they gave him all the names. His name was Alan Mitchell Edward George Patrick Henry Gallagher. if you get six names, you're going to turn out to be somebody weird, which is what he was. I mean, he's just, they don't make them like him anymore. Posted something about it on Facebook. And of course, people start posting things about his glasses covered in dip spit. We used to call him radar eyes because somebody would have a radar gun and go, "That guy's throwing 95. And I would be, "No, he's throwing 86. Radar eyes, the gun says it. Nope, he's throwing 86. Okay. And some of the other ones that you might have seen, they did a groundbreaking ceremony at the baseball stadium in Kansas City. He stood too close to a gas heater and set his pants on fire. And in front of a group of people, starts taking his pants off, only to reveal a second pair of pants. Why were you wearing two pairs of pants? Because it was cold. So just kind of a legendary dude. You run across a guy like that exactly once in your life, if you're lucky. And so I had the opportunity to, and now he's up there complaining about the umpires with Doc Edwards, your old manager in Sioux Falls.
Well, that's a wonderful tribute, Lauren.
I talked way too much. I didn't think I was going to talk that much.
No, it's great. I was bummed for you when I heard that news, because I had heard all these great stories about him already. And thank you for sharing all those stories. That's a lot of fun. He sounds like an incredible guy. And that was terrific.
He was like all of us. I mean, everybody's got flaws, including Bill Belichick. He was not without his flaws, but he was blissfully aware of what they were. And, I mean, there were countless times that you'd get, all right, I'd always take the early bus over to the ballpark. Always, always. And this is another thing he let me do. He used to let me shag. I was the broadcaster. He let me shag batting practice in the outfield barefoot.
Well, he must have recognized early on that you had a passion for baseball similar to what he did.
Maybe so, but I always took the early bus over, because would I rather be at the Holiday Inn in Joliet, or would I rather be at the ballpark? Let me think about that. Rather be at the ballpark. So I'd always take the early bus so that I could get my stuff together. If I could get everything done in time, boom, I'd go down and I'd shag BP, because really running around in the outfield and catching fly balls, that would have been a good living for me. But the times that we would take one bus over, let's say you have a long game the night before, you go to take a bus. Where's Al? He's at the track. He'll be at the stadium in a little bit. he was just an absolute character. So, I'm grateful to have had the opportunity. Where are we? We're at 59 minutes.
Wow.
All right. We got to talk. We're not going to talk NBA. We'll talk Bedford hockey, because this is a Bedford sports show. The boys, a 5-2 win in their season opener. Jack Sylvain, couple goals and an assist. Owen Roberto, pair of goals as well as first two varsity goals. And I get no details on this. The girls hockey team lost their season opener 10-4. At St. A's to Lebanon. And hopefully at some point we'll have our good friend Maddie Lucantoni on. We can talk a little bit of Bedford girls hockey because it's year two for the program. They have a senior goalie, Hannah Paradise. Maddie is a senior leader on that team. So rooting for them. And then the girls basketball team tonight opens up Memorial.
So hopefully you heard that game last night or went to it. And then next Tuesday we'll have the boys home opener.
We are?
So tune in for that.
Okay, we are.
Yep.
All right, good. I got to mark my calendar. just so I show up at the right place at the right time. That's really the most important thing. So, all right. Well, thank you for putting up with my Dirty Al stories. And I say that to you, the listener, as well as us talking about football and baseball for probably way too long. Harry, we hooked you up, dude. The entire show is one segment. So
One take.
Enjoy your sports week. Thanks for putting up with us for the last hour. And thank you to Colleen, Bill, Harry, and Chris here at the station. For Andrew Hansen, I'm Lauren Fox. We will catch you next.